This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. As always, my name is Alex Perney. We're very pleased to welcome on today Vince Shorb with National Financial Educators Council. He's the CEO and founder, and today we're going to be digging into financial literacy, but not necessarily in kind of the cookie cutter that most people are familiar with saying, hey, here's some things for financial planning. The big issue that we kind of see in today's society is that people coming out of high school, even coming out of college with a business and finance degree, I didn't really know my head from a hole in the ground when it came to most things personal finance. You know, I understood how to run complex equations and different things when it came to operating supply chain management, but I didn't know how to apply for a credit card. I didn't know anything about, how the finance system worked from a personal side. So helping to have people that are better educated and also helping, if you're parents, if you are parents of a child, how to broach this topic with your children and how to make sure that, people coming out into the workforce, people recently independent, can kind of get a feel for what it means to be financially literate. So Vince, I really do appreciate you being on with us today as the CEO and founder of your firm. It's certainly a pleasure to talk to people that have been in this industry for so long. So give us a little bit of background about yourself and then we'll jump into the topics at hand.
Alex, thanks for having me. And really, a background is, from the short perspective, I was just frustrated at what I learned at school. I spent 4 years studying science. I'm not a scientist. I don't care. I like discovery. I can care less about science. I spent 2 years studying foreign language. I know a little bit of Spanish. It doesn't do me any good in any business sense. I took 4 years of history. Some of the stuff was good, civics and so forth. I spent 4 years in English. 2 years was useful. The last 2 years of English and British literature, absolutely useless in my life. So I wasted a lot of time in school. And I was always in the back of class reading my dad's investing books. Always had an interest in that early on. And it really grew from this frustration is, hey, I wasn't taught anything useful that is really useful to my life right now in terms of important things in my life, how to take care of family, how to make a difference in the world, how to make sure that the roof's over the head and food's in my mouth, right? And so we spend all this money and tax dollars in schooling to train kids on completely outdated topics where half of the things I learned in school, I can ask Alexa right now. So that's how the company formed. And I always had an interest in money and I got into financial services. I wanted to spread that knowledge and help people with their finances. And I realized during that time I might have been putting a band-aid on some issues as opposed to addressing the root cause of a lot of their issues. And that's where I really started to think about getting into this financial education industry. We launched this company back in a 2006-ish area. And now today we're serving all 50 states, 60 countries, and helping local areas build and scale financial wellness programs, whether it's teaching groups or coaching individuals. That's our mission. And we also are big advocates as well, obviously promoting financial literacy in schools too. And this brings us up to you and I talking here.
Fantastic. Well, I definitely appreciate the background. And it's funny how so many people fall out of favor with what they went to school for. I'm one of the odd part is I'm in the minority of people that went kind of right into the market segment that I studied for, business and finance. And I'm a finance professional, but I have a cousin who went for marine biology and now he's a staff attorney for Merrill Lynch. So
interesting.
Yeah. Marine bio to being a finance attorney. So it's, it's one of those things where, again, and that's getting back to the literacy part of it is, kind of needing to know what you need to know and no one knows what they don't know. So let's kind of maybe look at this from a high perspective and then we'll drill down. And I forgot to mention this in the pre-call. I like to take notes when we talk. So if I'm looking down, I'm not looking at my phone. what would you say are some of kind of the core issues that you see in the populace in general when it comes to, again, what they don't know that is, again, high level, that is kind of easy to digest, but just gets glossed over a lot?
Yeah, I think the main part is I think people overcomplicate personal finance. Really, I look at personal finances as one goal initially when you become adults, which is making sure you're able to save money, right? I think that's the barometer of success early on for the foundation stage. Later, investments and growth are important, but that first stage, it really matters how much you're making, what your expenses are, and the main barometer is, are you able to save? Now, there's other nuances in there. Maybe your credit's bad, it's impacting your interest rates, and you can do some work there to lower your expenses. But really, when we look at it, those are the three key things. And I always tell people to make sure they're setting goals based around that early when they're getting their foundation, with the obvious first main priority, making sure you have some emergency money, and then make sure you have some money early on to set aside and invest. The biggest pitfalls I see leading up to that: college debt, student loan debt, credit card debt, big car purchases, right? I see a lot of fancy cars out there. I know if I'm looking at the population, I know what they're making and the basic socioeconomic status. There should not be that many fancy cars out there. So I think a lot of the pitfalls, again, are very simplistic. So a big role that we try to do is simplify personal finance, at least at the beginning. Right, beginning of adulthood, and then later, right, we're encouraging them to find those investments and those that interest to grow and expanding their money. Where it does get more complex, you need a good team, you need people you trust, and you need to focus on continuing gaining knowledge and watching the market. But at least the foundation, it's pretty basic for people out there.
Yeah, definitely. And to your point about cars, it's the average price of a new car right now is 45,000 and change. That is insane. I mean, that's a very expensive vehicle. To the point where it doesn't even have to be a fancy car, just a new car in today's market. If it's fancy, I mean, sky's the limit. But yeah, it's especially in today's market, understanding, again, to your point, not to overcomplicate it, but understanding, what you can afford, I think is kind of a core focus of any personal finance plan that, again, is not really taught or explained to people. It's just that, hey, you have money and you have some savings. Okay, well, don't spend all of your savings, but how to kind of budget, how to know what you can and can't afford as it, relates to what's going on out in the world. Now, to your point of kind of understanding that basics of, money in, money out, what you need to save, what are some good kind of stepping stones? And I would say even from the perspective of the education on how to educate children, because again, a lot of this isn't communicated. I love my parents, they're wonderful people, but by no fault of their own, they didn't really teach me much besides just, hey, here's a checking account. Here's a savings account where you can put some money. I had to figure it all out on my own budgeting and figuring out, what didn't work. So, maybe from that perspective, let's kind of dive into how this can be better explained to people, especially if you're coming from the perspective of a parent.
Yeah, great insight there. And really, I think the foundation of people's financial habits as adults are rooted in childhood. Studies out there show financial habits form between 7 and 9. Brown University has the most widely recognized study in that space. 50,000 kids shows financial habits as in terms of chores and work ethic form by age 9. So it starts young. And with kids, there's a, kids today, I had TV, radio, and smoke signals, when I grew up, not to age myself, but back, nowadays, these advanced marketing strategies are really impacting kids from a young age. So they're getting influenced by advertisers, they're getting influenced by these influencers, the YouTube unboxing videos, the shopping videos, these things. They're getting influenced by their parents and the people around them, right? And oftentimes they don't have the best financial habits. They're not being taught in school. So at the formidable ages, they're developing their spending habits, right? Most don't develop their savings or earning habits. What they learned is their spending habits. That's not a good first thing to learn. So I think those behaviors and habits that are forming at a young age, we need to be very cognizant. I think parents can do a lot at those ages in instilling chores and working for their money, not buying their kids things, making them pay for it, having them contribute toward household expenses, even at a young age, talking age 4 or 5. Making it very simplistic, but at least getting them in that process and procedures where they're doing that monthly with you. And then using those teachable moments, whether it be evaluating ads on TV. Hey, what's this ad trying to convince you of? What's it? Who's it selling to? to using those moments when you're shopping or meeting with your advisor and bringing them in and having those discussions. You know, as our kids grow up into teens, I think it's critical we're preparing them for the life stages. Student loan, moving out on your own, buying a car that's not that 45 grand, whatever you said, making sure that they're not making those initial mistakes with credit. One simple credit mistake, that could be 5-10 years on your credit, right? Not messing up your initial rent. So avoiding getting behind and getting in trouble at a young age, I think, is that next step. And then, you know, for adults, it's really different. A lot of times we haven't addressed those behaviors and habits we formed young. Because every adult has different plans, goals, dreams, aspirations, financial situation, I think the first step for anybody is having a plan. And I would say every student should graduate with a financial plan. Hey, do you want to be wealthy? Do you want to have that $10 million and be able to kind of, you know, call your own shots? Or are you happy with working 4 days a week and having a day off, you know, extra day off a week? Or, hey, did you find a passion project? You don't mind working 7 days a week. And you're, you know, do you want to be the big spender, conservative spender? You know, helping them develop that plan early and really thinking through what that means in terms of the relation to work and time, which are all critical factors for anybody to think about.
Yeah. So there's kind of two things that you brought up in there. And one thing I'd like to add is that big thing that I see in, you know, being in, you know, investment finance is people letting perfection stand in the way of progress, or, you know, perfection stand in the way of good enough. Because, you know, so many people, especially in, you know, the social media era, again, to that unboxing analogy or example that you gave, you know, it is so easy to get sucked into a hole. And especially, I mean, you know, it's not like it's age restricted content on YouTube or something. A kid, you know, if they have access to it, can go on and look at finance. And they see these things where it's like, oh, you need to do this by then. And, you know, they have all these other people kind of injecting their thoughts into their, you know, psyche, whether it be someone like a Dame Ramsey or someone that's saying that you need to live in a duplex and rent the other half out because it's the only way you're going to get a debt-free home. You know, again, taking a little bit of agency in the education of your children to, again, step back. You don't need to be, you know, a PhD in personal finance by the time you're 18. But again, understanding, hey, you know, what do you want in life? Does this kind of stuff interest you? Are you a big book reader and your best Saturday is sitting in a hammock reading a book? Or are you someone that likes to go out and enjoy time with friends? Do you love traveling? You know, it's that kind of thing to figure out, hey, you know, well, this is kind of the trajectory and here's kind of the things that you need to do to get there, at least giving them the tools, whether they build that house with those tools or not. They're adults at that point, so, you know, be what it may. So again, I think that's something that I would interject in there is just also, you know, understanding that, you know, there's a lot of outside influence, especially in this arena. It can be good, it can be bad, but it's a lot to take in, especially for someone that's forming their opinions. If they gravitate onto something that ultimately might be a detriment to them, pay attention to that. You know, it's not just the violent movies and the violent video games. It's the, you know.
True. Yeah. A lot of influences. And yeah, if we're not having those conversations and helping them explore, right? I think that exploration's key. To your point, yeah, there are a lot of people that say, hey, this is what you should be doing, living frugal and so forth. But if that's not a motivator to them, they're not going to do it, right? We need to find that motivator, that lifestyle that's going to motivate them. And that's really, you know, helping them develop reasons to learn is key. And I think a great way parents can do that in a fun way is really through career exploration too. You know, we see there's a study out that compared kids in China versus kids in U.S. and what they wanted to do as an adult. Kids in China was, I'm making up these terms, but it's very similar, astrophysicist, astronaut, you know, mathematician, right? Kids in America, the number one YouTube influencer. They had a celebrity sports star, and then the only real profession out there that was, you know, you had a very good chance of doing it was being a teacher, because our conversation at a recent advisory board meeting was that's because they were exposed to teachers. They're exposed to YouTube stars. They're exposed to celebrities, but they're not exposed to things that they may enjoy doing. So let's say, you know, your kid wants to be a professional basketball player, right? Yeah. Long shot, but let's bring them to a game and explore the other things they could do to be around the game they love. Maybe it's a referee. Maybe it's a concession person. Maybe they develop a product. Maybe it's you go talk to, you know, some of the vendors there, right? So helping them explore, hey, you like basketball. It would be great if you can become a pro basketball player. And I encourage you to do that work and effort and all that stuff to do so. but let's look at some backup so you could be around that sport and the people you love. And I think that's a great opportunity for parents to give their kids some options. And again, it's not like I have to be a pro basketball player. It's, hey, now I have some options and some fallbacks to be around the type of people that I enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably an easy one to digest, at least for parents to say, hey, you know, this is, you know, there's, you know, career fairs, there's counselors in high school that, again, tend to broach that. But again, to take agency of that and to really kind of be a little bit more forward thinking, because, you know, besides the teacher, you're the person that they're exposed to most until they get to be teenagers and they start wandering off outside the house. So, you know, again, giving them that career path, I think to kind of tie that back in, and then also maybe having the conversation of saying, hey, well, if you want to do this, here's kind of the steps that would need to occur. You know, it's, if you want to be a fighter pilot, well, you need to go to a 4-year school. You need to be an officer in the Air Force or the Army or something. You need to do all these kind of things so that way they can understand it's not just like, you get to be 18 and you just go pick from the job tree. There's things that need to be to happen with that. And to, again, to get back to finance, because I think the professional path is one that we could certainly dive into for several hours.
True.
But the personal finance one, I think a big one that I see a lot of the time, that at least in my own personal life, you know, being younger, almost be 35, but you know, over the past decade, is just the inability for people to understand credit. That's really kind of one of those big ones. And I don't necessarily know how to explain it to someone in a digestible fashion. So from your perspective, if you're a parent and trying to explain to your children, you know, besides just the fact that say, hey, you need to get a credit card. And that's kind of what my parents did. I think they thought I was smart enough to figure it out. And thankfully I was, you know, I never got in trouble with it and understood it wasn't just a, you know, free money bucket, but you know, it's something that you need to explain to children. So if you have, you know, a late teenager, someone going off to college, what are some ways that you can kind of explain, you know, the whole concept of credit to them? What kind of strategy would you utilize for that?
Yeah, you know, it first starts with their goals, right? So, hey, if they mention in their goals they want to buy a home or buy a car, you know, relating the big picture. So, you know, zooming out, how does credit fit in on the big picture, right? Where would you need credit? So, you know, if somebody says, hey, let's learn about credit, I'd be like, back in my, 10-year-old self, I'd be like, I don't care. What's credit? What does it do, right? It's a score. I don't care about credit score. But if, you know, you can zoom out first, show them on their particular plan that they shared with you, how it relates to getting a job, how it relates to your ability to buy a home, ability to buy a car, even rent a place and move out on your own. I think that's a good first step. And then, you know, highlighting the impacts of the risk as well early. Hey, if you mess up your credit, right, and you can't rent a place, you're going to be living with us and under our rules at age 30, 35, 40, right? So, you know, highlighting the risk, really drilling down on that. So I always like to start education with positive. Hey, here's what can happen if you build good credit, and here's how it relates. Also, the negative. Here's the risk, right? You can get yourself into big trouble, debt. You could be living with me or needing to borrow money from friends and family. And then I get into the nuances, right? And trying to really simplify it to start, and then, you know, driving down the education. But hey, you know, you need to. They're loaning you money in a sense. You need to pay that back on time. And you need to do some other things, keeping your overall debt low and getting on a regular structure on paying that on time and keeping your debt to a minimum. And just really trying to oversimplify it initially. I do like when parents are involved in that early. So instead of just throwing them on the 2-wheel bike, you know, giving them the training wheels. So you're saying, okay, hey, you're going to get your first credit card while you're under the roof. I'm going to be kind of the master controller. You can use it as you want. And then if you get in trouble, I'm taking this over and you're going to have to, pay it back in a certain way. So where there's parental oversight, I think is a nice segue. So if they do forget to pay the bill, 1 month, you know, and the parents there to catch it, what did you do wrong? What happened? Right. And there should be some punishment and some things associated with that, whether it be paying extra to you, whatever. But where there's parental oversight, so it's not that risk. You know, again, one small credit mistake, that's going to follow you around for a long time, can impact jobs, all those other things. So having some parental oversight, it always reminds me, my dad taught me to drive, right? He didn't just give me the keys, throw me out on the freeway, say, hey, go figure it out, right? He took me to this wide open parking lot, a few light poles, and I remember every time I'd get within, you know, first off, he was, okay, put your foot on the brake, start the car, let off the brake a little bit, put it into, you know, drive, let off the brake, now, you know, put it back and put the brake back on. So that was step by step he taught me. Then it was, okay, now put a little gas, now turn, right? But I still remember even then getting within 10, 20 foot of those light poles, I'd get nervous, tense up, just because it was a new skill. So I think, you know, my point there is, hey, for parents to have some oversight and to make sure they're getting their credit cards early and making sure that you're protecting them while they're developing that skill set. You know, nowadays I'm driving with one hand on the phone eating. No, I'm just kidding. But you get the point. It's like, it's a comfortable thing now. I could drive a parking lot, no problem. But it was because I developed those skill sets in a safe, secure environment. I think that's what parents can provide their kids.
Yeah, I really like the car analogy. I had a great conversation with an accountant named Melissa Leone. She's specializing in her subspecialty of expertise is female empowerment in personal finance. And she uses the car analogy too, is that you walk out, you look at the car, okay, you get in, left, right, okay, we're looking at our financial plan, you got to back out of the driveway, and eventually you get to the point where, yeah, you can get on the highway, get off the highway, you have everything around you, you know how to go get gas, you know how to, again, change the oil. That's, you know, to that effect, I like the car analogy. And that was also a really great conversation for anyone listening. I'd recommend that episode. But to back to the point, so we've kind of covered, you know, in general, saying, okay, let's set some goals with your children and start from an early age of identifying, hey, you know, what are these influences that are coming into you? You know, is this good? Is this bad? You know, kind of, again, starting small with, you know, good versus evil. You know, it's like, this is trying to do something to you. This is maybe some better source of information. Understanding that information for information's sake is not all created equal. These, you know, there are vested interests behind some of these people that are parroting these ideas to you. But then again, let's kind of, I think the very basics are easily digested. But once children start to get older, you know, if you haven't had a little bit of a hands-on approach, you know, again, there's some different things that need to be taught, and it's past just balancing a checkbook. You know, what would you say are maybe some other big key points, not to, you know, staying in that vein of not overcomplicating things, that parents can kind of help to prepare their children for best? And again, let's kind of drill down. I think we've gone over the broad strokes, but, you know, would it be something like student loans? You know, the big important ones that need to be addressed. And student loans certainly do kind of come back into the vein of credit cards and debt, but that's, again, a little bit of a higher level correlation to make. I don't think kids are really going to correlate the two, but they are.
True. Yeah, I think a few keys, if we're breaking down to that structure, income, expenses, savings, you know, number one, kids need to start working. Associate work with earning money instead of parents just handing them money to buy things, right? And, you know, at least me, I think one of my most valuable experiences, I always worked younger. I got a job at 15, in California, 16, but my mom, I had a friend there, so I got a job as a busboy. It taught me good work ethic, right? And I think that's a core one, helping them develop a strong work ethic, because if you don't have a strong work ethic, you're not going to get paid to your potential. So I think that's a core thing we need to teach kids. To your point, student loan debt, I think that's the biggest pitfall for most people out there, most kids coming into the real world. You know, at 17, you can take out student loans with absolutely no knowledge of loans, how much it will cost to pay back, not knowing how to read any contract, but you can sign for this, right? Without any parental oversight, which is scary in itself. So I think, hey, you need to have a certain level of knowledge before you can take out student loans. And there should be testing and things. We wrote a thing for Student Loan Protection Act to make sure kids have the knowledge needed before they're making college decision loans, because we consider it predatory when they're not. When you don't know information at 17, you're still a minor and you're able to sign for loans, we don't think that's really ethical. Additionally, how to move out on your own. I think, you know, when we're looking at that life stage, the beauty of something like how to move out on your own or how to buy your first car, it's nice because we're talking about something that the youth has interest in. I want to move out. I want to gain independence. I don't want to have parents' rules. And we're able to put all those boring sounding topics, right? It's not like, hey, you know, son, daughter, let's go talk about budgeting. Let's go talk about credit, right? They don't know these topics. So, but if we're able to do it in the guise of something that they're looking forward to, gaining independence and so forth, we can teach them all the core topics in there that they'll really need for most things in life under a framework that's of interest to them. I also think some conversation on managing your accounts properly, something as simple as setting automatic bill pay, how that can protect credit, something like setting calendar of major events that you need to consider, whether it be bills due or when to check your credit. Additionally, I think helping them develop some sort of plan. In the perfect world, I would see kids have the basic skills to make near-term financial decisions when they graduate. Additionally, they have some sort of plan that will help guide them and yet have the flexibility, because at 18, 17, 18, what do you know? Thinking back to myself at that age, what did I know? But giving them some flexibility, hey, this is just going to kind of give you some rough guidance. You can make changes as you're, doing these different things. Maybe meet somebody, now you want to speed up the timeline for having a kid. Now, what does that mean to your plan? So I think if every kid can graduate the basics to meet near-term decisions, a rough plan for the future, I think I'd be very happy. And I think we'd see a big change in the world and the country and with the overall financial health of Americans.
Yeah, and I think to that point as well is also trying to help children understand, just how expensive it is to live on your own. I would probably even say, like, in my mind, I'm kind of thinking right here of the way that I would do it. And let's kind of maybe frame this out as a thought experiment. I would probably sit a child down. Granted, full disclosure, I have no children. I have no plans to have children. So I'm just coming from maybe the wrong perspective. But something I think might be beneficial would be sitting down with a child and saying, okay, let's say you made $50,000 this year, right? We're going to subtract 20% for taxes, roughly. And then, okay, now we're going to look at what the market rent and wherever you'd like to live is, and we'll pick the median rent. Okay, that comes out every month. And we're going to pick, is this a place with a lot of jobs around there? Okay, let's factor in X travel, or maybe you work from home, so we'll adjust that. Here's what car insurance looks like for you. Here's what all these things look for you. And then let's look at what's left over so they can really kind of see. It's like, the fridge doesn't fill up with food. The, lights don't stay on because, mom and dad pay the bill. But just, really kind of understanding it, because I think a big part of the problem is that, you need to have a basic understanding of all of it. You don't need to be a subject matter expert in any of it, but you need to kind of understand how those things fit together. And I think that is where kind of it gets lost on people, and especially with student loans. I think the big problem with that is, unlike any other debt, it has a built-in deferment to it. With a mortgage, after that first month after closing, you're paying on that thing. And with a car payment, again, 30 days later, you make the first payment. Power bill, they're not too thrilled if you don't pay that thing. So, you get kind of – it's really the only kind of debt, and this blows my mind, that you get to kind of forget about it for 4-7 years, depending on how long you're in college. And that's a problem, is that, understanding that some of these things, especially with student debt, and that's why I was so happy when we managed to get our student debt paid when we were in our 20s. But we still have friends that we went to college with. I'm 35, will be 35, and clients, and we have friends that still to this day have student loan debt that didn't even go to grad school, which is bonkers.
Yeah, you made a great point with the sitting down with kids, sharing the bills, very insightful. We call it project-based learning, so very insightful there. That's one of the biggest impacts we have at an event we do still call RMX. We walk them around the room, they're making decisions. Hey, what kind of car, what kind of rent? And the biggest thing that we hear at the end is, I had no idea my parents pay this. The other one is, when we gave them a budget income, I think it was 45 or 50 grand, around what you said, maybe 52 grand. And they're all excited. Yes, I'm, making money. And they'd, we'd start them off at the car booth, right? Intentionally. And they get the nice car. Hey, I got still plenty of money, right? Then they'd get down taxes, and they get down to the rent and food. And they're like, okay, I have no money. I have to go change things on there. But very insightful of you, and yeah, that is a big thing that they have no clue what things run, and it's unfortunate. And that something that simple would really prepare them mentally for what life is about. It's parents can do that because, again, it's not taught in schools. And student counselors aren't doing really anything there for student loan debt. You know, I agree with your point too. If you're not feeling the pain after the first loan, right? You take out $5,000, now you have to pay back $50 a month. If you're not feeling that $50 a month pain and you're deferring it, 4 or 5, 6 years, whatever. You're not going to realize till that first, $600, $700, $800 bill comes. It's like, oh damn, now what I got myself into. I have that conversation a lot with people, and it's really unfortunate. My student counselor, she said, okay, just go to 3 or 4 colleges and tour the campus and go to the one you like the most, right? And which makes absolutely zero sense, but that was her advice to me. So, parents, you need to get involved on that aspect too in helping your kids plan. And there's so many alternative ways to learn cheap, at least the first few years. There's opportunities for them to really get out education on a very affordable basis still in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another part about this is that even if you are a parent and you need to get more education yourself personally on this, because let's face it, just time doesn't necessarily make an expert out of everyone. There's 90-year-olds that make very poor financial decisions.
Yeah.
There's 18-year-olds, which I would say by and large probably make way more bad financial decisions, but it's not like your baby do. They don't just fall out and you grow out of it. They can stick around for a long time. So, to that point of kind of, looking at, how we can educate our children, I think that, again, that's great. And also understanding the, directions that they can go and making sure they have a good basic understanding of how it works to live in society, I think is fantastic. And I don't think it's something that people, what I like about it, it's kind of ideal agnostic. You don't have to be, left, right, and center, political, no matter where you live. These are just things that need to happen to exist in society, which is one reason I like the financial literacy topic that we're discussing, because it means something to everyone. You don't have to. I find it hard to believe that there's someone out there that thinks that financial literacy is a bad thing. and if they do, I mean, there's the reason Baskin Robbins has 32 flavors, I guess, but it's a tough one.
Yeah, so great point. I just wanted to build on that. So great insight there. We do studies on that. Over 80% say, hey, it should be taught in schools. Every time we've done that study each year, closer to 84% this year. Nobody's trying to cancel financial literacy advocates, and it gets vast support across all demographics, ages, socioeconomics. It's an important thing, but I think that's to the detriment of financial literacy as well, because everybody believes it, right? There's no bad guy, right? There's no us versus them. And I think that's what commands a lot of the news attention now, is us versus them, this fight, right? Hey, it's whatever it may be. And I think, it's to the detriment of financial education. And we've been trying to find a villain for this, right? It's like, how can we get some people that are against financial literacy protesting, don't teach my kids about money? I think that would help the cause. But I do like the fact that I'm not having to worry about getting canceled. And everybody I've talked to, it's like, yes, that's great. But again, I don't think it's helping us further the movement, because we haven't seen really any changes. If we look at report cards over the last 100 years, the same 4 core subjects have been taught. Now, back then they had some religion class, some other things. In the 50s, we had home ec, but the same 4, English, social science, science, and mathematics, those are what has been taught. And we have computers now. We have AI, and they're teaching things that we were teaching people. It's an old Prussian model of training kids to be obedient and so forth. It's times of change. We need to make sure these kids are prepared. The financial markets are more complex than ever. A lot of things have changed. Back in the 1920s, we had door ringers, people that go to doors and ring bells in the morning to set off alarms because they didn't have alarm clocks. So a lot has changed. schooling has it, and we need to find I hope somebody out there listening starts protesting financial literacy. We need that just for greater media attention.
Yeah, and absolutely. And it's the trickle-down effect. It's, it's greater financial literacy will do wonders. It'll help, socioeconomic standards of everyone, standard of living for everyone. Not only that, it would help reduce, there's a direct correlation to how it can reduce entitlement programs like Medicare, Social Security, because if people have a good nest egg, and again, nest eggs are going to be determinant, and I just talked with, I had a podcast earlier today with a financial planner and his was interesting. It was a goal-based approach by working from the goals backwards by saying, okay, well, what makes you happy? Do you just want to, again, to the analogy of it, sitting in a book on your, reading a book on your back porch in the current house you live in, good enough for you? Does that make you happy? And you don't need to have as much. You can enjoy somewhere in the front term. You don't need to do all these crazy things. But if you want to go live on a yacht in the Maldives and you're 40 and have no retirement savings, well, that's really, then you're going to have to make some cuts and really focus on that. So figuring out, what we want, and I guess to the point of the financial planning, that's what kind of allows that stuff to happen, by people being literate and understanding what they want out of life and instilling that in your kids. Figure out what you want. It doesn't have to be the traditional model, but just understand that everything costs money. Everything.
Everything.
So expensive. Yeah. Everything is so expensive. And they tax you on everything. They tax you on the money you earn, and then they tax you when you spend the money to buy something, and they tax the house that you bought, and then they tax the car that you paid for. Yeah. They're still taxing me on my 200,000-mile Toyota. Blows my mind.
Yeah. It is amazing. I think, too, with financial literacy, comes more educated voters. I don't care what side of the spectrum you are, but I watched this interview. It's kind of interesting. This guy was going around my old hometown doing like YouTube short videos, and is asking people, hey, sign this petition if you want to waive student loan debt. And it showed like 15, 20 people all signing it. Then he said, okay, how much are you going to contribute toward this? They're like, oh, no, I don't want to contribute. So it's like, well, if that happens, it's going to have to come from somewhere. How much are you willing to contribute? Oh, I don't want to contribute anything. I want to waive, but I don't want to contribute anything. So even something as simplistic as that, I think it helps people just make better decisions when they're voting for certain policies. And everybody blames the politicians for the $30+ trillion debt, the $50+ trillion unfunded Social Security and Medicare area. But really, I think it's part politicians, but a lot of the voters are not educated on personal finance. And I think it's to the detriment of the country.
Oh, absolutely. An educated populace, an informed populace makes better decisions for themselves and the population as a whole. So, again, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, I think everyone can agree that education is a good thing. Now, again, I think we could probably give our op-ed on that to ad nauseum. But let's transition a little bit, because we've identified kind of, what parents can do. But a big portion of that is psychology of, why isn't this actually approached? It's a painful topic and it shouldn't be. It's something that everyone goes through. It's not like a small medical problem that only a certain few people have. This is a problem, or I should say, this is something that everyone experiences. It is a common core of the human experience, is to have to deal with finance in some form or fashion. So what do you kind of think is, and again, kind of the roadmap of solving this is for parents to kind of understand the psychology behind it and some of the roadblocks that they may face in actually doing this with their children. Because it's easy enough for us to say, yes, here's what you should do, but it's not that easy, is it?
It's not that easy, but it's because it requires dedicating time, thought, and processes to it. But it's not that difficult in terms of you don't have to have a master's degree in personal finance, right? So, in doing something simple, instilling chores, having monthly conversation. It can be weekly, where they're paying part of the bills or, using their savings. When they're going shopping, if they're wanting to buy something, they're doing it with the money they've earned. You're not buying things for them. So we're building up those muscles of delayed gratification. Okay, kid, hey, you want the bike, you're 50 bucks short, you're almost there, but you're wanting this teddy bear to spend 20 bucks on it. Do you really want that teddy bear now, or do you want this, you know, save up a few more months for this bike? Right, helping them build those muscles using timely conversations, right? Whether it be going to your advisor, going to the bank, hey, what's going on here? Here's what's happening. You know, getting them to pump gas, showing them how much is going in, what that means. You know, so we can use those timely events. And of course, having some structure at some points, I think, is important as well. But there's a lot of materials out there that you can use for that structure. I think the hardest part for parents is that time. Additionally, parents don't feel qualified oftentimes because their finances aren't in order. And so they're like, okay, how can I teach my kids when my finances aren't in order? But I think that makes a great teachable moment, right? And sharing, hey, this is what we're trying to do. And also making games out of it, right? Hey, we're trying to save, you know, so we can do a vacation as a family and also for retirement for us. Let's do a light bill challenge this month, right? Where we're going to cut down the light bill. So make sure your lights are off. If we can do this successfully, if we, you know, sitting down with them with the electric bill, hey, here's what it was at this time last year. Here's what it was over the months, right? It was 200 bucks last year. If we get that down to 180 this year, let's go have a pizza party or something, whatever the family loves to do. So we're teaching them in fun ways. And I have a funny story on that. A parent actually said, yeah, my kid's actually harassing me to shut off the lights now since they did that. And they're only one, hey, mom, you left the light on, right? We're not going to get this thing. So, you know, it can kind of work in reverse order as well if you're just doing that. But I think the biggest thing for parents, you don't have to be an expert. Use those teachable moments, get your kids to do the chores, contribute to household expenses, getting them to save, and just doing your best to do that. Additionally, there's a lot of programs out there you can enlist your kids in. If you don't want to do the formal education, there's a lot of programs out there. Our graduates, our CFEI, Certified Financial Education Instructors, host a lot of those programs for kids. So you can always reach out to us as well if you need that contact.
And I think there's definitely a component. You know, again, that's a great roadmap, but also speaking to kind of the psychology, I feel like there's a barrier of, especially with, you know, adults, let's say you have children, you're in your late 30s, 40s, 50s. I think there's kind of a degree of shame that some people feel of just not having that basis of knowledge of being like, hey, I'm an adult. I have kids now. I need to teach them about money. And it's like, I can't even balance my own checkbook. And that's one thing that I really, you know, when I have individuals like you on here, I really like to kind of hammer that home is that no one knows everything. Everyone starts from some baseline and everyone has been in your shoes. Maybe, again, if you're a 45-year-old parent and you don't really know anything, well, there's people that are in the same boat as you, maybe a different age, but everyone has to start somewhere. And just because it's late doesn't mean it's too late to start the race. You know, it needs to happen sometime. And so long as you're not talking to, you know, someone who's just inherently not a great person, you know, anyone in our fields are always happy to help on the basic stuff. You know, granted, don't fleece me with questions on my time off if you're a friend or an associate of mine, not professionally, but, you know, any of us that are, you know, in this industry, you don't do it for, you know, the paychecks are nice, but, you know, we inherently probably enjoy it. So, you know, ask questions. There's resources out there that you can go and get a face-to-face with, and understand that it's not shameful not to know something. You just got to take the first step. To that analogy that Melissa, who I had on here, said, you know, you got to walk out of your front door of your house, get in the car, buckle your seatbelt, and eventually you'll be driving on the interstate.
And that shame is a big one. I'm glad you mentioned that, especially today. We see social media. Everybody looks like they're doing great, right? We see all the nice trips, the nice food, but the reality is behind the scenes, it's not so much. So I think that's even adding more shame. And you, I'm sure you experience this in your profession. I know I see it all the time. When people are doing something cool with money, buying a home, making an investment, doing something, and they may not have prepared. Let's say they go say, oh, I want to invest in crypto. They start investing in crypto with no money, take money out of their cash advance on their credit card to make that investment. But it sounds cool, right? And people talk a lot when things are going well for them financially. Maybe they bought a home, it went up a lot in value. When things are going well, people talk more about it. When things aren't going so well, you never hear people saying, oh, my home just went down 100 grand, or, hey, you know, all that money I fronted on my credit card to buy some random crypto Dogecoin, you know, now I'm not, you know, lost, you know, half my investment. So they're not talking about those things. So, you know, if we, when we're looking at behavioral finance, we feel we deserve what our peers have, right? So we feel we're on equal footing and deserve what they do. And I think just seeing all the success out there from a front level, but behind the scenes is not. You know, in my mortgage days, I took over 20,000 loan applications, right? This is going back 20 years ago. And, you know, you would think, hey, this person sounds professional. Hey, they're a doctor, a lawyer. You know, you're kind of talking to them. You know, they got a $1 million home. They got a second property. Okay, this person's probably doing well. You pull up their credit. You pull up their savings. You're like, damn, I'm not going to be able to get this person approved, right? Or it's going to be a very big struggle. So I always tell people that feel shameful, hey, a lot of people look like they're doing well, but the reality is they aren't. And no matter where you're at right now, right, it doesn't matter. You can always progress and grow as long as you have, you commit to gaining the knowledge, commit to building some team around you, that infrastructure that can be helpful. And you can get to that next level. And that's what we encourage.
Yeah. And I would say from, you know, either the parent or the child's perspective, keep in mind, no one puts their house foreclosure on Instagram. You know, when they, you know, have something bad happen, you get such a skewed rose colored glasses view of the world, especially finance. You know, when you just kind of look at the media that's out there, you either get like the, you know, you either get like a Dante's Inferno view from some pundits, or you get this whole thing where it's like, look at all these amazing things. And the reality of it's nuanced. There's middle ground to it, but you don't see 80% of that nuance. You know, it's either like one polar extreme or the other. And just like with life, it's on a spectrum. You know, there's all the colors of the rainbow. The rainbow is not just pink. It is not just blue. It's not just yellow. There is gradients to all of this. And I think that's very important for people to kind of take away from this. So with that said, we're kind of hitting up on 45 minutes, which is where my producer likes me to bookend these. So I always like to turn it over to my guest to, you know, final thoughts on, you know, if there's a, and we certainly do have time, if there's something that we didn't hit on that you think would be, you know, beneficial for people to take away, you know, certainly let's broach that topic now and then we'll bring it in for a landing.
Yeah, sounds good. I like the general theme of this show, so I appreciate you and your efforts. And you know what I tell people is gain knowledge in the way you're comfortable with, right? Shows like this are a great way to gain knowledge. Books, you know, blogs, all these things. There's so many ways to gain knowledge. Today, again, prioritizing the key things, you know, starting with a plan, right? What's the overall plan? Prioritizing those things that are most important and urgent to achieving that plan. So if you want to buy a home in 2 years and your credit sucks and you have a lot of debt, that's where you would start, right? Or hey, if you're debt free and want to invest in a few years but don't have any risk capital, well, we need to start on working on raising the income or lowering the expenses so you can save more. So really being strategic about that so you don't feel overwhelmed. And that way each month you can target a specific area of your finances. The other big thing I just want to leave with is, you know, most people spend 40, 50, maybe 60 hours a week working, right? And of that time outside of work, most people don't spend more than a half hour on personal finances or anything there. So if that ratio continues, that work is going to be dominant through your life and that personal finance, because you're not, you know, dedicating the time to it. It's just like working out. If you're looking to, you know, gain muscle or lose fat, if you don't commit the time and effort to train, you're not going to improve your situation. Being strategic is a key thing. So I appreciate you, what you guys are doing on the show. Great show. And for the parents out there, please teach your kids about money. Become an advocate as well. Encourage your schools to get that in there, because I consider the most important topic in high school that needs to be taught, so they're prepared, so they don't get in trouble. When they do get in trouble, it affects their emotional state, their well-being, their health, their happiness, their ability to live a full, fulfilling life. So parents, it's your responsibility, right? I hate to put it on you like that. I know you're busy. It's your responsibility, but let's get the schools involved as well. And I do thank you.
Absolutely. So if people want to get in touch with you, you know, obviously you do offer this as a professional service. How can they find you, either social media, websites? How can they get in touch?
Yeah, I'm at financialeducatorscouncil.org. We train and help financial educators and coaches scale financial wellness programs in their community. So it's very community oriented. And so if you have an interest there, or if you're an advocate, you want to help promote this cause, reach out to us. Feel free to reach out to me personally too at LinkedIn. Vince Shorb, Shorb. And Alex, thanks again for having me.
All righty, Vince. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Great conversation. Well, everyone, thank you very much for joining with us today on this edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. As always, my name is Alex Perney, and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of the Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at advantaira.com and subscribe.